side joint. Ooh, cult side joint.
Hello, Amarin, on this middling sunny day where I am. How's it going where you are up in the north?
In the north, I just call it a middling day, period. It's just, you know, it's one of those, it's not exceptional. You start getting excited about the warmer weather, then the warmer weather is just kind of like apathetic with you, and it's just kind of like 50. No hate to 50 degree weather, but I don't know. Sometimes you want it to be more, and it's just, nah. So I'm feeling a little lackluster in that way. And we're rolling with it. We're rolling with it. It's okay. It's okay.
It's not good. Yesterday, I had 3 literal tons of rocks delivered to my house, which I had to help unload. And now they're all in my front yard looking at me, going, hey, the weather says it's going to rain tomorrow. You should probably lay us all out today. And I'm like, but it's Sunday and I want to talk about Burning Man.
There are better things to be done on this Sunday than rock laying. And I don't think anybody would fault you for feeling that way.
Plus, I found a new show on the CW, so I'm really into that.
Oh, my God. The CW gives and gives and gives, if we're being
honest.
So
great. It's a show that's like kind of like a grown-up version of The Gilmore Girls, starring 2 cast members from The Gilmore Girls.
Oh, perfect. So, very convenient of them to just line that up so well. I love it.
Both Luke and Chad Michael Murray, some faves.
No. Wait. Yeah. Everybody stop. What show is it? I love Chad Michael Murray.
Sullivan's Crossing. Who doesn't love Chad Michael Murray?
Everybody loves Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah, it's called Sullivan's Crossing.
Old? Okay,
no,
I love it.
The second season comes out in April this month.
All right. Well, guys, we've established we can just all go home, I think.
Say goodbye.
That was all I needed to know.
Once you're in Sullivan's Crossing, you're not leaving.
Yeah, well, this means Chad Michael Murray is back to acting after his hiatus being a father. That's how much I love Chad Michael Murray, ladies and gentlemen. I'm aware of the status of his job. So,
nice.
Yeah, very relieved he's returning to us. Thank you, sir.
He arguably looks better as, like, he's now acting as, like, a 40-year-old, you know, carpenter loner in the woods guy, looking
very
great
good.
At it. And Luke from Gilmore Girls is, like, his, you know, boss.
Ooh, okay. All right.
AKA
very intrigued.
Sully of Sullivan's Crossing. So.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Well,
that's excellent.
There's a lot of good stuff going on here. Can't wait to dive in myself. Not cult related, but, you know, there's some other interest involved.
Is the writing middling? Is it predictable? Sure. But that's what you like about the CW. That's what you go there for.
Yep. It's common writing. The CW, I don't know. I'm just trying to help them out. But yeah, it's not great. But they do have a lot of the emotional bait. And there are hot people.
Hot people, as far as the eye can see. A token Native American in this one.
Yeah. Yum.
Oh, but you know what? It's set in Nova Scotia, which is really like
perfect.
Gorgeous. And also there's some point at which they hire a lawyer and the lawyer goes, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, you hired Canadian actors because it's the only people, them and Gilbert Blythe from Anne of Green Gables are the only people who say, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Wow. Hitting a lot of just great heartthrob shout out moments tonight.
Oh my gosh.
Shout out to Gilbert. All right. Wow.
Okay. We're back in it. Sorry, guys. I know you're here to talk about Burning Man Part 2, and so are we, but you understand.
You get it. There's always time to talk a little Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah, it's true. Also, just last shout out to Anne of Green Gables because I mentioned Gilbert Blythe, so now I have to go all the way. So a friend of mine was saying the other day that she is finding herself letting her kid dress in TV characters, which she didn't think she'd do as a parent. And I was saying, like, yeah, I struggle with that too. I don't like Solace to dress as TV characters. So I made a compromise that we had to make our TV character outfits, like, and then it'd be like slightly less commercialized. But then as I was saying it, I had like yet another ribbon in my hair, which is my thing, which is when I realized I cosplay Anne of Green Gables every fucking day of my life. And so who am I?
You shouldn't really just shame him,
Batman. Yeah,
because he has different interests, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just that yours are more subtle. Though maybe what you could encourage is for him to more subtly weave the accents into his outfits, like you're doing, right? Because you have you don't have the full Anne of Green Gables all the time, of course, sometimes for sure. But you know, you've got the ribbon, except so maybe there's a trade off where it's like he wears the cool pants. I don't know what mm-hmm. Batman wears, but he wears gloves and he wears the mask alone. I'm kidding. But something like this, perhaps. I don't know.
We went to see the Flash movie when it came out last year, and yes. he made me order an elaborate full head to toe Flash costume. And then he wow. put it on for the show, and he was completely serious. And he was like, "Do I look good? Do I look like the Flash?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Okay, let's go." And we very seriously went to the Flash with no sense yeah. of irony. And he was dressed as the Flash, and he felt like this was exactly what you do at a Flash movie. No sense of I'm costuming. Nobody else is doing this. Like just full Yeah,
it's how you show your respect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that on some level.
I love it so much.
I think it's pretty much the best thing ever. And I think we should all dress up to go to the movies sometimes. I think it's the best. I remember in the summer whenever everybody was going to the Barbie movie and they were all dressing up in pink
and
things.
Oh, that was so cute.
And it was Barbie summer. And it was so fun to go to. When I went to the theater, there were all these people in pink. And I was just like, yeah, this is exactly the energy that I'm looking for mm-hmm. in every theater showing. I want to go to Dune. I want people wearing a lot of scarves.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And briefly, women were just greeting each other by saying, "Hi, Barbie."
That was heaven. That was really fun. Every summer, let's do a little something like that we all just collectively get in on. It honestly made me feel like there was hope in the world, which is, it's interesting.
That's so
it's interesting.
Nice. I guess, okay, so when we're rejoining Burning Man today, because that's the cult we're joining this week, maybe we can greet each other with, "Hey, Burner."
"Hey, Burner." That's very cute. Just
a little darker, but – and we talked about my dead boyfriend last time, right? So we've covered
him. Sure did. Check.
The death and the resurrection of Kenny. Got it.
Welcome back to us again, Kenny. Yes, it was a real ride, but we've covered it. And we're in for even more fun this week from what I remember of the foreshadowing that
it's
we
gonna be so
set
great.
Up. It's going to be pretty
so
hot.
Mm. In all the senses of the word. Okay.
Ready.
All right. So here we go. We are – sorry, I'm just here. If you will – I'm fixing my computer for one moment.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Amryn, tell us one more thing that you love about either Chad Michael Murray or Anne of Green Gables.
Okay, it's Chad Michael Murray. Let's go. Two highlights from Chad Michael Murray. The reasons that I love him, one is the Princess Story movie with Hilary Duff, I believe. Of course, very important core part of my childhood. Made me think I wanted to go to Princeton for years. And this is actually what I'm going to segue into saying is that my parents thought I was really smart. And I am an intellectual child and I did understand the academic systems from a very young age. So I was really talking about a college a lot when I was younger. And I told my parents very proudly at one point that I wanted to go to Princeton and they were very proud of me. And they were like, "Wow, big dreams. Good for her. Our ambitious daughter knows what Princeton is." And really, I just loved the movie with Chad Michael Murray and Hilary Duff, where I believe she is going to Princeton, and he does as well. So that's my story about how once it served me really well and made me look much more intellectual than I really was. I don't know if my parents even know that to this day. I think actually, no, I very, very recently, last year, told them. When my mom told that story with pride, I was like, "I got to tell you something, Mom." I got to tell you something. Aww. I definitely snuck that movie from the library, watched under my bed, and then referenced that, and you had no idea. So,
no, she didn't. She never.
Embarrassing.
So,
for
how was
you.
Your reaction to that? Was she like?
Well, now she loved it. Now she thought it was hilarious. She really appreciates me for my full, unruly, wild spirit, which I think she always has. But when you're not responsible for the adult anymore, child, and they're out of the house, and you're not the wild spirit is not housed with you.
Yeah.
I think it's a little easier to be run free, my beautiful child. That's a little easier. I'm responsible mostly for myself now. I know when you have to wrangle the kid in Walmart, you're not wanting to encourage that spirit quite so much. So I think in hindsight, she was like, "What an adorable story." And also you did go to college, which we love. Little kiss on the head, that's nice. It all, I also told her I wanted to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader when I told her that I had figured out my dream job once. So I kept her on the wires. We'll see. Okay. It's nice. Fine.
All right. Well, are you ready to rejoin Burning Man?
I sure am. Maybe this will be my new dream. Maybe this could be my new childhood aspiration in my 27th year of life.
Well, it might have been had Plathville not ruined us for everything else. Guys, on the Patreon, we just joined Plathville. And frankly, it's over. We're no longer searching for cults. The auditions are closed. We found the cult we're joining. It's Plathville.
It's Plathville. Yeah. If you haven't heard our coverage of Plathville, you have to listen to it because we are the biggest fans ever. And also, we're probably going to go back to Plathville on the Patreon again because I'm going to demand it. I said that 15 times on the Patreon, so I'm saying it again here on the main feed. But no, it's true. We love it. Please go listen. I'm not interested in joining another group ever, but I will be inquisitive and open to the conversation about Burning Man anyway.
Amarin needs what Amarin needs. Don't try to deny her, Plathville. No. This is what she's doing.
That's right. Okay. I'm in my free will moment and what my free will wants, Plathville.
That's what it wants.
As Selena Gomez would say, the heart wants what it wants.
Yeah. Thank you. Duh. Okay. So that said, guys, you know, we're going to try to limp along with the rest of these cults. We're going to somewhat join, but just FYI, we already live in Plathville.
Heart won't be in it.
All right. So to that end, back into Burning Man. So last week we talked about the history of Burning Man, what Burning Man is. Now we're going to talk overall, like what it is, how it functions, the big picture Burning Man. Now we're going small picture Burning Man, because that's really where I like to live at all times, is the small picture of all the awesome groups that we join. So we're going to, Absolutely. Looking from the sky up, and now we're looking from the ground out. I think perfect what we're saying here. So
ground out
that
view.
Is what's happening. Hi, Burning Man. We're glad to be back with you. Okay, let's talk about art. Okay, a hallmark of Burning Man is large-scale interactive installation art inspired by the intersection of maker culture, technology, and nature. So let's stop really quick, because maker culture is a really specific part of the art scene, and it's quite different from all things around it. I'm actually friends with the editor of Make Magazine. His name is Caleb. He's the coolest. He mostly just makes viral videos about his ducks and his donkeys.
Fantastic.
But
yes.
I know. I see his videos like shared on my feed sometimes, and I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's Caleb. And then I'm like, no, it's not. It's a viral video that's just in my feed. And as it happens, it is Caleb. Like,
it happens to be created in this way. Yeah, yes. Love.
But as it happens, he's the editor of Make Magazine. And I highly recommend Make Magazine to everyone everywhere. So the world of makers is different than the world of fine artists or fiber artists or artists in general. Makers, somebody in the highbrow art world might call making like, quote, lowbrow. It's not that at all. I mean, it gets uber techie. Makers are, their number one thing is 3D printers. They love tech. They love gadgets. They love 3D printers. But it's not just that either. Makers are people who basically work with assemblage more than, so it can be anything from like caveman level, you know, pinch pot making, all the way up to like building your own 3D printer to 3D print the cool thing. Something that Caleb does in his spare time is modified because he has so much access to cool maker stuff because of his position. He modifies handheld game. I don't play video games at all. The controly things, the little with the buttons, right? He modifies them for people with disabilities so that they can play where it wasn't built for them to play before. So whatever it is that like their particular needs are, maybe they only can play with one hand. Maybe they can play, you know, in a totally different way than somebody else. So he modifies game players for people who need them modified. And that's what a maker would do, right? They make things. They find a solution via 3D making to make the world a better place, whether that's art or whether that's practical.
Something functional. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so because of that, a lot of the maker world is 3D. Well, almost by necessity, it's 3D, right? Because if you're painting a picture, you're not being a maker, right? Mm-hmm. You're not making a thing. If you paint a picture creative, and then you build a frame around it and then you build a stand for it, you're a maker.
Yes. And so in that way, they would be classified, just for clarification, I've seen people classify them this way, interested in your opinion, as like separate things. You can be both an artist, like a...
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Weird because makers are artists. I would
they
argue
are artists.
Artist is an elusive term.
But
you can be like a fine
makers.
Artist and a maker. For instance.
And those would be two different.
A painter
if
and
I
a maker.
Told you today I'm doing fine arts or today I'm doing making, you would understand I'm talking about two totally different.
These are different practices that can overlap, right? And some people, and really, like, I think if we're talking about the same thing here, people like to play around with where those boundaries end and begin. But yes, there is, vibrant making community that works a lot with. Would you say found, like, not exclusively objects, but it also builds a lot upon existing things that are already in this world, making
found
it almost an eco thing as well.
Absolutely. The found objects are a heavy part of the maker culture. And yes, it is very eco by design by coincidence, you know, because that's the whole thing. In the communes that I've spent a lot of time in, we all have a thing called a resource yard, which it's a junkyard, right? But they're just called resource yards, and language, I think, is so important. And so it is looked at differently. When you have a resource yard, you don't dump stuff there like you do at the dump. You put it there until somebody needs a resource, and then they go get it, you know? Like, so a lot of our resource yard is constantly being reused by maker types, and maybe they go get a machine and fix it and bring it back to life. Or maybe they go get something and, like, sculpt it into a dinosaur that they put in the middle of the woods that you just walk past, and that's really cool. Because one thing about makers that makes them different than maybe your grandpa who liked to tinker and fix the toaster is that they are almost always incorporating, like, beauty and art into whatever it is that they're doing, which is just such a fun
great distinction. Yeah, absolutely. They've taken it to another. Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, so the world of making also leans into, making can have any aesthetic in the wide world. It can be my Anne of Green Gables aesthetic, but it often leans itself into a bit of a Mad Max aesthetic by virtue of reusing a lot of old things, many metal things, many, you know, so it often, not certainly not always, but maker culture art can lean into kind of a post-apocalyptic kind of an expression often by virtue of clumping a bunch of gears together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Things like that. So that's not, I hope I've given you, this isn't like something I printed out. So I just off the fly gave you kind of a, you, the listener, not you, Amarin, who knows perfectly well what a maker is. But and then when you go into big cities, there are almost always now maker spaces, which is basically a library full of tools that you can check out to, and that makes making accessible to people that it otherwise wouldn't be, right? So you can go check out a 3D printer and print whatever it is that you're trying to make, you know, or you can go check out these laser cutter or like whatever cool tool you can't buy for $5,000 and keep in your kitchen, but you just go check it out at the maker space. And then you can make all these cool things with, and then again, if we're talking eco, you know, your town only has to own one 3D printer. They don't have to own 40,000 3D printers for the 40,000 people that would like to print two things, you know? So, anyway, that's maker culture is really awesome. And so the art at Burning Man is, maybe you would call the entirety of the art at Burning Man maker, right? Mm. I don't think there are any galleries with canvases painted. It's all 3D. It's all cobbled together. We talked about the temples last time. That's certainly kind of an ultimate maker creation.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So as we know, Burning Man is heavy in the art. And so it is full of really cool art installations. I mean, I would argue that maybe half the point of going to Burning Man isn't to see other people. It's to walk around and all of this art, which is meant to be an experiential thing, right? Like you're supposed to walk by and absorb the 50 sculptures you walk by today. They're supposed to kind of integrate into your life. And so that's what's happening at Burning Man, which is really fun and cool. And then of course, because you're in such an art heavy space, it extends into people's costuming. It extends into what their bikes look like. It just like, it really oozes into everything, which is like gorgeous and cool. Or disorienting and upsetting if you're having a bad trip. So don't do that.
Depending on context, could be a very different experience for people.
I can't believe people go to Burning Man and like do a shit ton of drugs, which is also mostly what happens at Burning Man.
I was going to say, me, yeah.
Like, yeah, that's way too much. Like enough is one thing at a time is totally fine for me.
A single thing is fine.
Yeah, we don't have to overlap this. Whew. All right. But props to you guys who are that tough. All right. I'm coming back. I'm going to reread the first sentence because it bears repeating. A hallmark of Burning Man is large-scale interactive installation art inspired by the intersection of maker culture, technology, and nature. Nice intersection of three cool things that don't always get mashed up together.
Absolutely.
Many works invite participation through climbing, touching, technological interfaces, or motion. At night, much of the artwork is illuminated by fire or LEDs. Creative expression through art is encouraged at Burning Man in many forms. Music, performance art, guerrilla theater are art forms commonly presented within the camps and developed areas of the city. Artwork is placed in the open playa beyond the streets of the city. Each year, hundreds of works of art ranging from small to very large scale are brought to Black Rock City. Yay.
Yeah.
So much fun. Art on the player is assisted by player. It's the playa, and that is my lifelong reading of Victorian literature that makes me pronounce player even when that's not the word.
Player.
How embarrassing for me. Art on the playa is assisted by a department of the Burning Man project called Artery, which helps artists place their art in the desert and ensures lighting to prevent collisions. Burn platforms to protect the integrity of the dry lake bed and that fire safety and make sure that fire safety requirements are met. Art grants are available to participants via a system of curation and oversight with applicable deadlines early in the year. Grants are intended to help artists produce work beyond the scope of their own means. In 2018, the Renwick Gallery of the Smithsonian American Art Museum in Washington, D.C., brought art from Burning Man to the nation's capital. The exhibition took over the entire Renwick Gallery building and surrounding neighborhood. How fun. The exhibit featured room-sized installations, costumes, and jewelry. Fun.
Very fun.
Yeah, love it. Love me some art on the playa. Let's talk about cars. So we talked about this previously. Cars are banned on the playa overall because they were like beginning to murder people and they were being problematic. And honestly, like we're not trying to kill the whole planet. So cars are banned unless they are what they call art cars. And so an art car, I'm about to get into it, but an art car has to be able to be deemed an art car. It basically has to be unrecognizable as a car. And at that point, you can apply to be an art car and actually bring your car into the event. So Black Rock City bills itself as primarily for pedestrians and bicyclists, with the exception of staff service cars, as well as artistic, quote, mutant vehicles that patrol the festival grounds. Vehicles are produced and brought in via the main gate road, a desert dirt road with a speed limit of 10 miles per hour. All vehicles driving into the city must have the appropriate vehicle pass, which is that they're an art car, not a car car. All occupants are required to have valid tickets in order to get in. Vehicles are searched for any items that are prohibited in the city. I guess this is just a call out, like, don't try to hide your drugs in your art car.
Fair. Fair note.
Put them in your butt like the rest of us.
Be usual.
For those who have their tickets held at will call, the booths are located. Okay, so this is more information than you need. I'm going to skip that. When the Burning Man ends and the mass exodus from Black Rock City begins, a road traffic control procedure called pulsing is used to direct the vehicles out of the city because it's basically like, because people, you have to drive to the desert. You can't just walk there. So there's a parking area. And then there's basically like a day or two of just traffic gridlock slowly going out. So they do something called pulsing, where basically they do like surges of traffic. So to kind of like get people moving in a more effective way. All vehicles are pulsed forward all at once for about a mile along the Blackgate Road. This allows vehicles to stop. Oh, and turn off their engines so that they're not just idling while they're stalled for long chunks of time.
Yeah, good.
Bicycles and tricycles are popular for getting around on the dry lake. Mountain bikes are generally preferred over road bikes for riding on the dried silt, which is normally hard, but sometimes becomes loose with the traffic. So that is an important part of life on the playa. You want to bring a good bike and you want to be aware of like a shit ton of dust and you want to know that you're not going to be riding in a car. So just accept that about your life. Oh, every night during Burning Man, thousands of people on their bikes and art cars, illuminated sculptures, and stages create a unique visual effect.
That makes sense. Yeah. Very cool.
It's so nice. Let's go into mutant vehicles a little bit more. They are purpose-built or creatively altered motorized vehicles. They delineate a type of, quote, art car that's more dramatically modified than simply decorating an existing vehicle. So kind of what I said, like, it can't be recognizable as a car or it's not getting in. Also, like, you've got steep competition, so you can't be like, I put streamers on my car. Burning Man participants who wish to bring motorized mutant vehicles must submit their designs in advance to the event's own DMV or the Department of Mutant Vehicles. If a vehicle design meets the mutant vehicle criteria, the vehicle is invited to the event for a final physical inspection and licensing for the event. One of the criteria of the DMV employs to determine whether an application for a proposed mutant vehicle is approved is, can you recognize the base as a vehicle? There were over 600 approved mutant vehicles at the event in 2010. So kind of gives you, that's a lot of vehicles still, 600, dang.
That's tons, yeah. That's a lot of different cars or vehicles of some kind, yeah.
I don't want to bring a mutant vehicle. That seems like a lot of responsibility.
Too much work. Yeah, too much work. I don't feel like bringing a normal vehicle to a lot of events.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well. okay, so let's go through a little bit of the history of Burning Man. Again, we've done the history overall, so we're just going to run through like a little bit of an interesting timeline. I just, like, there's a million different timelines with different themes for Burning Man, so I just highlighted a couple of things that I thought were interesting. In 1992, that was the first year that there was amplified music at Burning Man. So before that, it was entirely acoustic. So 92 was the first time that they like brought in amps, which I would imagine was controversial at the time because those kind of things always are. It's like when Bob Dylan played an electric guitar for the first time and like the whole world just screeched to a stop. So I would guess it was something like that, although now it doesn't sound like a big deal to us. But 92, first year of amplified music at Burning Man. 93, Christmas Camp becomes the first theme camp, which is two members dressing up as Santa Claus and giving out fruitcake. Yep, so that was the first themed. In 1994 was the first year of wooden spires and lamp lighting. So it was just dark before that.
Okay.
In 1995, the Center Cab Cafe began selling coffee. Again, these sound small, but can you imagine, like, if you're a burner and, like, the first year that there's coffee for sale?
Oh, that would
you're going to be talking about that a lot.
I'm a camper. I go camping a lot. I can imagine how crazy it would be if there was just coffee one year at a place you were camping regularly and it was usually like, no, there's nothing, you know? That'd be crazy.
Yeah, you just have to lick this old cocaine off this chick from last night. that's the only
kind of boost you're getting this morning.
Last night's old cocaine. All right. 1996, the first fatality in a motorcycle collision. Three people were seriously injured in a tent run over by a car. This is why they stopped having cars. So that sucked. Let's see. 1997 is the first year that they had grid streets and a driving ban. So 96, a car ran over a tent. 97, driving ban. We're not fucking around with that. So that happened. And then they also made the grid streets for the first time, which was probably, again, like a huge help and a huge change.
Yeah.
Then we go on to 1998. By 1998, they had, this is interesting. So let me go back a little bit. In 1996, they had 11 themed camps. In 1997, they had 51 themed camps and 21 pieces of placed art. That's in 97. So 51 themed camps. That's pretty quick. Remember, the first themed camp was in 1993. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So that is very fast.
Yeah. People get into it, right? If you give the people a cool thing, the people will do cool things with it, especially if they're all a bunch of cool makers. So
absolutely. Yes.
Yes. Super fun. So 97, 51 themed camps, 21 pieces of placed art. By 1998, we went from 51 themed camps to 348 themed camps. By 2000, we had 460 themed camps and 80 pieces of placed art.
Woo! Climbing. Yeah.
By 2001, we had 466 themed camps and 150 pieces of placed art. So we're up and up and up. By 2003, We had 504 themed camps and 261 pieces of placed art. This is also the year 2003 that dogs are banned for the first time.
Ah.
Also, one fatality that year, 10 arrests, 9 police citations. So getting a little out of hand. They're scapegoating the dogs. The dogs are out.
The dogs have to go. That's the line.
Well, I'll tell you this. Like, if you decide you're going to start your own commune or cult someday and you go get a book about it, of which there are many to choose from, you don't have to write your own and reinvent this wheel. There are tons of books about how to start a commune. Every single one of them will say, limit the number of dogs you have. It's like number three on the checklist because everybody has a dog. Everybody wants a dog. Dogs pack up. Then they cease to be your animal and they become a ruling class of a pack of dogs.
So true.
Who will eat your chickens and maybe your small children. So the dingo ate your baby.
Don't want to create a pack of wild dogs.
No, you do not. No. So that's always – so no surprise for community people at all that Burning Man figured out – the only surprise is that it took them so long because there's just nothing to be said about it. Everybody loves freedom, but it can't apply to the dogs. They will rule us.
Gotta have some basic rules here. Can't turn into a Burning Man dog fort.
It cannot, and it definitely would. By 2005, we had 485 theme camps. 485 theme camps. That's a lot of theme camps.
That's tons. That's tons.
I feel like, how would you even choose? I mean, I understand, like, I go to the Rainbow, and they have theme camps, but there aren't 485 of them. There's, like, I don't know, 30. So, like, and they're big, and they're kind of well-established, and so I kind of know, like, what I'm getting into. And I basically just have to go, like, do I like people who are centered around tea, or do I like people who are centered around being Buddhist monks? Do I like kids? Do I hate kids? Do I like drugs? Do I want to sleep in? Like, there's not that you kind of just lean into what feels good to you and put your tent up, right? But 485, I feel like I would want like a college book, like a
course finder.
Yeah,
like one of those catalogs.
Exactly, a catalog. That's what I would want.
Exactly, that's what you would need. I guess you can't even like look through that many themes. Like I may be wrong, but I feel like if you're doing that, you're literally just picking one. Like your friends are saying, "We're going to do this together," and you're like, "Yeah." Right.
Yeah. Or like you're just tired. Like, this one's fine. I live here now.
Right. Yeah. Because how do you have the time to prep for an event like this and also go through that many individual groups? Just very hard for me to fathom as someone that was probably terrified by like 5 clubs I could have joined at one point in college. So I don't know how you'd do it.
I feel like you'd just walk till you were tired and be like, I guess I live in Dolphinville now.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this will have to do.
Yeah, the Dolphins
you guys
are
full?
My people.
Okay, cool. So, I'll be here. Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I would need the course catalog, and then I would, like, heavily study it. I'd read all 485 descriptions before I went and, like, highlight the ones I was interested in and then, like, narrow it down. Like, I would really get into this. Or I'd be sad. That's that.
Yeah, fair.
In 2005 also, same year that we're talking about, the man perched atop a funhouse maze, which could be turned on by participants. Oh, it could be turned by participants, confusing those at a distance who use it to navigate. Oh, that's horrifying.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. So not only is it on top of a maze, this is not for me. I want to be a person who's into this. And I do think it's cool and fun, but like, I need my North Star to stay north. I can't have you just zigzagging it all over the sky.
That's a pretty dramatic commitment to freedom, I guess. I don't know what that is. But yeah, I don't like that either. That makes me feel destabilized.
Yeah. Yeah. Yet another fatality and 6 arrests at this one and 218 citations. I blame the fact that everyone was disoriented.
Yeah. What were they thinking was going to happen, moving the big man around like that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So 2007 comes along. We've now got 681 theme camps. We've got 300 pieces of art. We've got 40,000 attendees. The theme for the year was the Green Man. On this one, the man was prematurely set on fire around 2:58 a.m. Tuesday, August 28th, during a full lunar eclipse. A repeat Burning Man prankster, Paul Addis, was arrested and charged with arson. What a dick move. He ruined Burning Man. For all the people who paid all that money and stopped their lives and went to Burning Man.
No reason for it. That's a big dick move. Hate that.
A repeated Burning Man prankster. Fuck you, Paul. You're a dick.
Very rude.
Sorry, Paul. I don't know. Maybe you've redeemed yourself by now, but that wasn't cool at all.
Hit us up if you've done something to make up for this.
Yeah, let us know, Paul, if you've redeemed yourself in any way. And the man was rebuilt for regular Saturday burn. He pleaded guilty in May of 2008 to one felony count of injury to property and was sentenced to up to 4 years in Nevada State. Holy shit. Okay, well, sounds like you did your time, Paul. And ordered to pay $30,000 in restitution. Okay, well, that seems to have ironed itself out. Sorry,
actually,
Paul.
Yeah, Paul, sounds like soon. You did your time. Yep. Okay, fair enough.
Okay, all's well that ends well with Paul. All right, now we're up to 2010. We've got 52,000 attendees. We have 700 themed camps. We have 275 pieces of placed art, and the Burning Man has gotten as tall as 104 feet. So everything's getting bigger and bigger. All right. Now we are in 2013. We have 1,056 theme camps. I can't even read the catalog now. You've overwhelmed
what?
Me.
What? That's
I'm just
insane.
Going back to the dolphin people. I can't even do the math on this.
Can't do that. No.
We've got 382 pieces of placed art. That's pretty fun. We've got 68,000 attendees. Oh, the theme for the year was the cargo cult. That sounds like fun.
Okay.
I don't know what it means. We'll have to look into it, but I like the sound of it. Yeah, I'm interested as well. So this basically just keeps going up and up and up. Now let's go to 2017. We have 1,395 theme camps, an unknown amount of mutant vehicles, 370 pieces of placed art, 70,000 attendees. The theme is radical ritual, and the Burning Man is 105 feet tall.
Oof.
All right. Now we're in 2018. In 2018, 1,472 theme camps. Remember, we started with the one with the Santa Clauses and the fruitcakes.
Wow.
We've got 618 mutant vehicles. We've got 383 pieces of placed art, 70,000 attendees. And this year, 2018, the theme is iRobot.
I don't like that. No, thanks. Yeah.
Let's see. Due to ticket overselling, the population of Black Rock City exceeded the $70,000 participant limit. And on Thursday of the event, BLM requested that the gate be closed. New participants were only let in once others had left. So that sounds like a bit of a clusterfuck.
Mm-hmm.
But clusterfucks are going to happen in your desert utopia.
It's true. It's true.
And then there were a couple of years that it basically was like, it doesn't even have statistics because those were the COVID years.
Yeah.
And it didn't officially even happen. So I get the impression that it did somewhat sort of occur, but not in any real official capacity. There aren't stats on that. And then 2023, the event experienced inclement weather and flooding for the first time, forcing the gates and the roads leading to Black Rock City. Oh, this is a whole other thing that we're going to get to. So don't forget, we're going to talk about weather a little bit, but don't forget that this is entirely placed on a dry lake bed in a desert. So you might imagine that a very small amount of rain would dramatically change the physicality
the landscape,
of the land.
The geography
on.
Is shifting in a rainstorm.
How do we just never think of this as people? How do we just always think that whatever we're doing is forever and it's never going to change and it's never going to rain and the wind's never going to blow? This is how we keep fucking ourselves, people. It's this exact thing.
Truly. It's just called forethought. And a lot of us in groups, we're not just considering all the angles. I'd recommend getting a person with anxiety on your side, with a massive anxiety disorder, because I am not some kind of manager, but I could lend so much to this crew apparently, because I literally, for free, my brain will do this for us. My brain will be like, here's 5,000 things that could go wrong because of the nature, because of God, because of, I don't know, animatronics coming to life and deciding they want to rule the country. I'm considering the possibilities. That's all I'm saying. It's one perk to the anxiety.
And you would think of all of those at 2:30 in the morning when your eyes just pinged open. That's when you do your best work.
Bright
your best
awake.
Anxiety work. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I look like that guy from the X-Men with the laser beam eyes, just whoop, awake, and I have many thoughts on Burning Man. But they did not, unfortunately. So
they didn't consult you.
This is what I was alluding to last week whenever I said I knew about some things with Burning Man that didn't go so well.
Oh.
Now this is the shoe dropping, listeners. If you were waiting for me to say, here it is, the balloon has popped, I was referencing this. This is what I was. So I'm excited to get into it.
Okay, okay. Well, I was going to first talk about rich people and how they ruin everything, but let me change
the
order.
No. I think
here.
We probably should talk about rich people and how they ruin everything.
Okay, it's
they
short.
Do.
It's brief.
Let's
because
do it.
It's a given. We all know this is the case. All right, rich people ruining everything. There is an airport there now for private planes. All right, so billionaires heard about Burning Man. And billionaires decided, like, because they think of themselves as invincible and they think of themselves as, like, above everybody else, they're like, oh, I want to go to Burning Man. I'm really cool. But also, like, I definitely still want caviar for breakfast. I'm not a monster. So they just created their own version of Burning Man. They were like, I'm going to go do this so I can tell everybody that I did this cool thing, but I won't actually do any of the cool things. And maybe I'll kill like some environment and ruin somebody else's experience while I'm at it.
Possible.
That's neither here nor there to me because I didn't get to this place by being a great person. So
yes.
All that said, these billionaires fly into an airplane on private planes. Then they're driven to their camps, served by hired help, nicknamed Sherpas. We could just stop there, but we'll keep going. And they sleep in air-conditioned beds. One venture capitalist billionaire threw a $16,000 per head party at his camp.
Fun.
Yeah.
That's
head.
Just light.
Per cool. Yeah. In 2017, Google employees shipped in a box of lobsters for a meal. I'm sure the lobsters enjoyed that. Longstanding ties to powerful tech bros and their money have made this event different than it was ever planned to be. Burning Man is Silicon Valley, Elon Musk told Recode in 2014. Burning Man is Silicon Valley. If you haven't been, you just don't get it.
Ooh, I love
you
that.
You don't
Isn't
get it,
so
Elon Musk.
Exclusive. You just don't get it.
You don't get it, Elon Musk. Oh, I hate you so much.
We hate you, Elon. This is not an Elon-friendly podcast. And I say
it's
that at the risk that it hurts us because he truly has ears everywhere. But I don't like him one bit.
I don't like him either. I didn't even like him before he was such a public piece of shit. Yeah, because I'm not a fan of like fortunate sons and their daddy's billions. Or people who profit off of slave labor in mines.
No.
I'm just thinking out loud, Elon Musk.
You know, shockingly, I don't think this is the hottest take ever, but blood diamonds and modern slavery for jewelry purposes, I don't think that's a great way to get your tech companies started. And I'm not pointing at anybody in particular. I'm just saying that anybody that fits under that umbrella, I would hold massive judgment for. That's all I'm saying.
Additionally, I would say that inheriting your money from your daddy's blood diamonds doesn't make you a good businessman.
No, that's too far. I'm kidding. We'd have to agree. Yeah. How dare you, Jesse?
Did your English degree tell you that?
A long established tradition of legacy and other manly words from the patriarchy. No,
large
I'm not a fan.
All
penises all around.
So, yeah. So Elon Musk wants the rest of us to know that we just don't get it. Thanks, Elon Musk, for the hot tip. You really
I
got your finger
I already knew
on the
that,
pulse.
Elon. Thanks so much.
When I think of the common man, I certainly think of Elon fucking Musk.
He comes to mind. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The everyman. The everyman. Jackson Brown would be impressed by you, sir. All right. That's a throwback to another time.
That was a beautiful reference. I almost started singing I'm Every Woman in there at one point, but, you know, it was the Elon Musk I'm Every Man version. So you're welcome that I didn't burst into that song.
Jackson Brown, waiting here for every man.
Yes.
He's your guy. He's your guy, Elon Musk. Look him up.
Look him up.
I listened to that album at the Rainbow. All right, luxury campsites springing up to house 100 people at the cost of $25,000 a spot. In 2019, the festival finally banned one ostentatious campsite that charged attendees $100,000 for access to a two-bedroom air-conditioned suite with a minibar. Although commerce at the event is banned and organizers maintain that they've rarely broken even because costs are so high. Burning Man is a cash cow. The nonprofit organization that runs the fest claimed $46 million in annual revenue in 2019.
Lord.
Lord.
See, that's, and this is what, when I said last week, that I had some concerns and I was like an early days Burning Man potential joiner versus I like was too young when it was good, in my opinion, which sounds like such a ridiculous. That sounds like literally everybody talking about any festival ever. Back when it was actually good, you know, back
it's true,
when
it was though. It's always true.
Right. But it's always right. If these things that have a shelf life, we really should like stop doing a festival after like 10 years because like it, we know this to be true at this
That's
point.
When
like
Elon Musk
fresh
comes in.
Life.
Shits all over
yes. It takes him about 10 years to realize what cool things are. So once you once the rich people find us, we have to change the plot. Yeah, we failed to do that with Burning Man. So this is what I was referencing, though, is like, yeah, this did sound super pure and fun, but then it does reach this point where it starts to sound pretty hoity-toity. And I don't know if it's true, but I have this fear in situations where money levels get involved like this, and it's like, there's the air-conditioned minibar, and there's the blah, blah, blah. That it's affecting the people that aren't in that tier negatively, adversely, because it always is, not to spoil the plot there, guys, but it's always going to be negatively affecting them. So anytime that's present, it makes me want to participate as a regular person far less because I'm just like, how much shorter stick, how much of a shorter stick am I going to get so that yours can be a staff or whatever, you know, like a reinforced log cabin or something in most situations, I guess, for that analogy.
I think I have a solution. So I do think that festivals need to have a shelf life given like only because rich people come in and ruin it, right? So we'll use Elon Musk as an example because he's a monster and shouldn't be allowed to live with the rest of us. Amen. So I'm looking at you, Elon Musk. Give me a call if you want to talk about it. He definitely seems like the type to run from confrontation, so I'm not worried about it. Did you watch him fire his own reporter because his own reporter asked him a question like 2 weeks ago?
I did, yeah. I think the only way that he would ever try to engage in confrontation is if he felt really confident that he was going to win.
Right,
and I feel really confident he wouldn't feel that way having one moment with you. So that I feel confident he's not going to call. Now, I would love to be proved wrong, though, because you could probably read him to the high heavens. So see.
Call anytime, Elon.
Give
we have
us
much
a call,
to discuss.
Sir.
In the meantime, though, I think so. Yes, I think people like him ruin everything for everybody. You know, like Coachella was probably fun before the fucking Kardashians decided it was cool, right? Like all of these things are cool. The rich people come in and ruin it. So here's what I think we should do. So, and this should be a policy for all of us everywhere who are cool and fun and maker types and artist types and want cool things. We're doing our cool thing. It builds up. We get more and more people, which is what we want because we want like a mass human art experience together. We want to share that with each other. And then the minute that somebody like Elon Musk comes in, right? That's okay. We make Elon feel real comfortable. We tell him all the nice things that he wants to hear about how big his dick is. And then we roll him, right? Mm-hmm. For everything he's worth. We take his expensive suit. We take his wallet. We run up charges on his credit cards. We take his car. We strip it down for parts. We do whatever we need to do. Then we just leave Elon. He can figure out his life. We're not going to hurt him. We're just rolling him, right? And then we ghost that site. We make a whole different thing and we just start over.
Perfect. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. That sounds ideal. A little trap. Simple, sophisticated. I'm all in. Let's go. I think that's what we should be doing 100%. And then, just keep on their toes.
Elon's fancy clothes and his wallet and his credit cards and like the copper wiring from his car fund our new project that will hide from Elon.
Excellent. See, it's a self-sustaining system. You've thought of everything.
Yeah. I think, we've closed the loop. All right, you're welcome, everybody. So just let's all make note of that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the rain on a dry desert lake bed. How do we not see this coming? Okay, so the rain came. Took a long time to get there, but 1 year just recently, I believe it was in 2023. Yep, it was in 23. So last year, this is last year's event. Oh, actually, my good friend Fairy, who is a former burner herself, really, really, we spent a lot of time reveling in this year because she was just like, look at all these rich idiots. Like, there, it was a bad scene. So it was fun to watch from the outside. All right. So the rain came and the surrounding desert or the playa turned it all into a sludgy wasteland and left tens of thousands of wealthy sojourners literally stuck in the mud. On Friday, September 1st, after most of the scheduled events and live performances were canceled due to the weather, Burning Man organizers closed routes in and out of the area, forcing attendees to stay behind and ration their food or else find alternate routes out, which is not easy in the middle of the desert where they made the road in. Some, like Diplo and Chris Rock, hitched rides with strangers to make it out, but many others, who weren't rich people, were forced to wait until the main road opened on Monday. Attendees trudged through mud, many barefoot or with plastic bags on their feet. There was chaos. There were wild rumors spread of Ebola contagion. Thankfully, that wasn't true. And mud attendees chemical burns. That is true. It's called playafoot, and it results from the alkaline soil touching your skin. Comparisons were made to Firefest, of course. One person did die due to a suspected drug overdose while at the festival. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And then when, of course, then there's like people are not leaving in an organized way. They're leaving in a chaotic, trying to desperately get out way. So they left behind massive amounts of waste, including belongings and abandoned vehicles, all of which organizers are responsible for removing. So that's what happened when there was I mean, it was like an inch of rain. It wasn't a deluge. It was like an inch of rain. I'm not overstating that. It might have been less than an inch of rain.
Wow.
Yep. Celebrity DJ Diplo posted a video to Instagram on Saturday showing him and comedian Chris Rock riding the back of a fan's pickup truck. And then they walked 6 miles through the mud before hitching a ride. He said, "I legit walked the side of the road for hours with my thumb out." Yes, that's what real people have to do when they go to the desert and it rains on them, sir.
Yep, that's about right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a real clusterfuck. Like, people were, like, rationing food, rationing everything that they needed, their own medicines. They were trapped there for days and days and days.
Very scary.
Exactly the thing that I would think of at 2:30 in the morning.
Yes.
And which is also why I would absolutely have a private exit plan at all times, which I do at all times.
So. Yes, you have to be prepared. Not always for this sort of thing, but, like, yeah, for an exit. And yeah, this is literally the worst case scenario for sure.
I have mentioned here before that I like my suitors to bring a rotisserie chicken and a cake and then leave by 8 p.m. But this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is my exit strategy. You're never going to see me. We're never having breakfast together. I'm out.
Yes.
I've got an exit plan. I'm out. If you won't leave my house, I will leave my house.
No problem. I'm going to go.
So that is what happened when it rained. It was a real clusterfuck. Everybody had a really shitty time. Bummer that they had a shitty time, but it's just weird to me that like nobody thought that that might happen because we live on the earth.
Yeah. I don't understand why this wasn't considered either. I, like you said, this isn't like, it wasn't a lot of rain. It wasn't like a shocking natural disaster.
No.
And also, like, when this happened in context, there was a lot of weird weather stuff going on, and they weren't totally blindsided by this happening. I want to note they were, like, they should have been relatively aware. They were just kind of doing, it seems like, the fingers in the ears thing, where they were just like, but we don't wanna, which I could be wrong completely, but that's certainly the way that it was coming across. So wasn't great to see that play out. Seemed genuinely horrifying. The footage...
This is the not part envious. That you were aware of. So what were your thoughts coming in? Like,
oh, it was very scary. It really freaked me out. It to me was just sheer panic. It was like, I've referenced these books before, but conservative kids always have these end of the world books that they read that are written by
Darkness. Shout out to Frank Peretti. Heck yeah.
Exactly. But they also have this subgenre of books that I, for some reason, read all the time, which were about the world ending in very specific, like, almost like, it's weird because I feel like he didn't realize he was kind of writing about global warming, but he basically was. But he just had no idea. Like, it wasn't a topic at the time. These were written before we were, like, really having this big, serious, prescient discussion. Haha, hilarious and sad. Because this was so recent. But yeah, he wrote these and it was like, the tides will rise and like everything will wash away and the moon will slam into the earth and all, you know, all this stuff. Ooh. And it was scary. And that's what it, when I was seeing this footage, I was like, oh my God, it's one of those books come to life. Like, it literally looked like an abysmal hellscape where people were just like scared and trying to keep like positive, but it just looked... so gross and damp. And like, if you've been wet for a long time.
Oh, yeah. It's the worst.
And I know you have, because you've been in this lifestyle type thing before. And not the Burning Man lifestyle, but just like being outside for a long time. And I have been wet for a really long time before. And it, and if it's muddy.
Ugh.
oh, and if there's lots of people and you're wearing, and they're wearing weird clothes too. Like they're not wearing the right clothes for it. And they're wearing like these boots that they're having to like walk barefoot in a lot of this footage because the shoes that they wore were so incompatible with the weather, and they were prepared for sand. They weren't prepared for like stick and wet. So like they literally are just out there in their bare feet and like, you know, there's stuff in the ground and people are not being clean. So there's trash everywhere and the rain is washing stuff. It's, it looks horrible, like a landfill exploded into the ocean, kind of.
It is
sand.
Like that. I went to Wakarusa, which is like a Northern Arkansas outdoor music festival. Pretty big. I mean, like Snoop Dogg was playing that year. Medicine for the People was playing, which is why I was there. Actually, my husband was playing, which is technically why I was there, but I was really there for Medicine for the People. But it rained like that. Now, we're in Arkansas and we are used to rain, so it wasn't like it wasn't the clusterfuck that this was, because people were like, oh, it's raining. I guess we're now at a festival where it's raining. Like, we're in Arkansas. We're not in a desert. We have like grass that absorbs, you know, moisture. We just aren't loving this. But what happens still, this is in a place that's much more, rain is common. We have grass and trees. We have riverways. So it wasn't catastrophic. It was just really inconvenient and not fun. But it rained such a deluge that the paths, which were also mud, became, this is true, at this Wakarusa, they became, I was there to see my husband's band play. And he got to play there because he won a contest to get to play at Wakarusa. And I stuffed the ballot box to make him win that contest because I loved him. And he used that as a reason to leave me because he was such a talented musician that like he could get better babes than me. So what a joyful time it was in my life is what I'm saying. But I was there anyway. And this deluge came and it like ate up people's tents and people were just like walking around sopping wet and like, but they kind of just hunkered down for it. Like they were in it for the long haul. And also like it was hard to get out because of the weather and the traffic and all that. Here's why I say all this. The main paths of walking were dusty mud, just like out at the playa. And with this rain, it made the mud go almost up to your knees, which means that not only is that disgusting, and I'll tell you why it's more than disgusting in a minute, but it's very exhausting to try to just walk over to a food truck and try to get some food because you're suctioned up to almost your knees and you're having to lift your legs up high for every step. You're having to suction them out of the mud for every step. And then guess where everybody's been shitting for the last several days? All these and thousands of people in porta potties, which are now overflowed because the trucks can't get in to empty them. Now where are you shitting? Somewhere.
Still somewhere.
You're still peeing somewhere. That's all in the mud. We all know it's in the mud. God forbid you have an open wound, for real. God forbid
seriously.
You got a scratch while you
were there. Incredibly dangerous space to be
vile.
Any
vile.
Kind of open skin. Yeah.
Yeah. Guess
so nasty.
I left.
Hellscape. Yeah. Not
Hellscape.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they, and then the thing that made, I know we've already talked about this, but to kind of circle back and say the thing that made this Burning Man situation so freaking terrifying is that, like you're saying, you're like, I'm going to bounce because I'm not doing this anymore. These people could not bounce.
No, they could not
bounce. So they are stuck, trapped, and in the abysmal conditions that they are in, which
awful.
I can only imagine is just adding massive panic. And then now to make everything even worse for everybody, imagine if you guys have ever flown and you were on a flight that got canceled at the same time as another flight getting canceled, and the whole airport feels like it's in a full panic because like two flights have been canceled and 60 people
and
are very angry.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody's freaking out. Like that, but a whole festival of people, right? Like everybody is relatively stuck in the same boat, so the vibe is pretty bad, I'd guess, from what I was seeing, which to me, that would be like the worst part is the randomness of like humans under pressure because they do crazy stuff sometimes.
They do. And plus, don't forget, they're out of drugs.
God knows the drugs have run out.
So now they're overhanged, as the Plaths would say.
They've got an overhang for sure, and it's not going well.
You won't find me there, but props to you guys for having fun. I do like the festival. I don't know why you guys didn't see it coming that the earth has sometimes rain and you're on a dry lake bed in a desert. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the environment, and then we're kind of wrapping on Burning Man. They do have a leave no trace policy. Burning Man takes place in the middle of a large playa. While not inhabited by humans itself, the area around the playa is home to many animals and plants. Oh, we're not the only beings. Good to remember. Their goal is not to contaminate the area with litter, commonly known as moop or matter out of place. The amount of residual trash at the site has increased over the years. No surprise, because the people have increased as well. While fire is a primary component of many art exhibits, materials must be burned on a burn platform so that it doesn't like scorch and scar the earth underneath. So these are good things. I'm glad that they're thinking of these and considering these things. From 1990 through 99, burning was allowed to take place directly on the surface of the playa, but this left burn scars. When it was determined in 2000 that the burn scars do not dissipate with the annual winter rains and flooding, they changed the rules about that. Even gray water is not to be dumped on the playa. Do you know what gray water is?
Yes, I do. It's dirty water for human wastewater. Yeah. Right.
It's runoff. It's runoff.
Water. Yeah.
After you've washed your hands or the dishes or gone pee or whatever it is. So that's gray water. Even gray water is not to be dumped on the playa. Used shower water must be captured and either evaporated off or collected and carried home with the participants or disposed of by roving septic pumping trucks, which also service RVs. Who is bringing an RV to this? Is part of you guys are being part of the problem.
Yeah.
Methods used for evaporating water often include a plastic sheet with a wood frame. The Bureau of Land Management, which maintains the desert, has very strict requirements for the event. These stipulations include trash cleanup, removal of burn scars, dust abatement, and capture of fluid drippings from participant vehicles. For 4 weeks after the event has ended, there is a cleanup crew remaining in the desert, taking care of everything that's been left behind. Typically, a fair amount of detritus and litter is scattered across the desert. Leftover trash, including abandoned vehicles, was particularly heavy after the 23 rain event. A staggering 100,000 tons of carbon emissions annually are put out there, not to mention a growing noise pollution problem and an increasingly obnoxious number of private jets that ratchet up the carbon footprint ever higher. The festival's relationship to the indigenous lands on which it resides further complicate all of this. Black Rock City sits in the middle of the Pyramid Lake Plateau Reservation. Oh, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Pyramid Lake Paiute Reservation. While emphasizing his tribe's friendly relationship to the fest, Chairman James Phoenix of the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe described annoyances like trash and debris left behind for the locals to deal with, aircraft dipping into the lake and off-limit wilderness areas, and ever-increasing influx of traffic into the area. Ironically, the Pyramid Lake tribal police were the ones to disperse the climate protesters. Ironically, there was a climate protest in 2023 blocking the people going into the event, and Paiute Police Department dispersed the protesters to let the cars through, which is the year that it then rained and all of those people were stuck and fucked.
So just a quick question for everybody. Did we get the message? Did we learn the lesson?
From the Lord?
Literally from the land, from like this is not like, makes me sick. I don't know. The Paiute thing is I've been to that area. I don't know if you've ever been before, but
no,
I've been
not.
In the Pyramid Lake area, and it's a very special area, and it is a sacred area to people that are indigenous to the area, but that's definitely not how it's treated. So you can, I just want to throw that out there and say that that is a kind of an upsetting element of this, which is just that. It's beautiful to see art demonstrations and cool things like that take place, but it's hard whenever it gets to an extent where it becomes disrespectful of people's heritage or the...
statistic. Yeah, no, for sure. But here's the last statistic I have on it. The festival generates upward of $60 million for the local economy. So you do get stuck because everybody knows that the poorest areas in our country are all reservations. The poorest areas are reservations, poorer than inner cities, poorer than Cabrini Green. These are the poorest areas in our country where addiction is a rampant, constant issue because of the poverty, but also because because there's so little access to not just government resources, because they are considered independent of the government in many ways, but also like medical resources. There's a brain drain. Like, I could go on and on. So mm-hmm. the money that it generates for the locals is very much needed, because they are set up in a catch-22 where like they definitely need that right. money for their infrastructure. And yet like we're destroying their, yeah, their sacred land.
Yeah, no, it's a bad situation. Do you have any, and it's okay if you don't, we can just put a pin in this for any of us to look up if we're interested. Do you have any stats on how much of that generated revenue actually goes back to the local community with the reservation contingency that we're considering? Because I have heard some concerning statements. So I'm just curious what your research told you.
Not more than what I just have printed in front of me, but my understanding is that this number is not – so Burning Man generates whatever the number was, like $84 million for itself. That's what it generates for itself yeah. In ticket sales and all of the things, and then it reinvests the bulk of that into the event, right, and the cleanup and the infrastructure and all of that stuff. That's how Burning Man keeps going. But this yeah. is saying that the fest generates upward of $60 million for the local economy, not for Burning Man. So we're talking okay. about people who run a gas station on the road
right.
going in, you know, and people who yeah. run a grocery store and people who have motels on the way in. Like that's where, so it's generating a shit ton of money for the surrounding town who has a basic yeah. infrastructure and gets all these customers in. So that yeah. is certainly a benefit to them. And it's a predictable benefit. Like you're not going to have all that influx of people and they're not going to not want Funyuns, you know, so right. you got to stock Absolutely. Those Funyuns.
Yeah, it's definitely benefiting. Yeah, the local community. Well, that's a great clarification that you've yeah. decided. We're just separating out the amounts, because that is very good. And it does make it a catch-22 where it does yeah. offer them some benefits, which we at least can appreciate. And as we've heard about with other groups, I know that burners and the people that organize the event do try on some level to make an effort to do some of the rebalancing of the natural area when they can. I don't know if that always goes well, but I will throw them that bone.
Yeah, no, you know, I think that there's good intent. I don't know enough about the gritty details of, you know, reforesting an area to,
sure.
to, for lack of a better term, to know how possible it is to have a large scale event like that and not have any effects. Now, I will say, of course, the Rainbow has tens of thousands of people every year, and they do a very, very good job of leaving yes. No trace, and in fact, of replanting trees and replanting lots of seeds as they go. But they're not in a desert. And so it's not necessarily apples and apples to compare the two events, because it is easier to walk into a thriving forest.
Yeah.
Wipe it out a little bit and then just throw some more seeds behind you, because it was already thriving and it has a full ecosystem in place. A dry True. Desert isn't the same ecosystem, and I don't know that it has the ability to recover the same. I don't know how to compare the two, you know. So yeah. yes, you can have a large scale event and not leave terrible effects. Many, True. Many people say when like locals will say when the Rainbow leaves, like, well, they actually forest looks better, you know, than before they got
You're
here.
Taking
like,
leave it better than you found it to a whole new outdoor level, which I respect the hell out of. Yes.
Yeah. They basically like cut out all the underbrush for firewood for several weeks. And then like, so now you've got a cleared forest, which is actually a safer forest, and a forest yes. where new growth can start. And there's less competition for the trees that are there. Like,
it's a beautiful thing. I really encourage, if people haven't done this, if I can't stop talking about camping because we're talking about outdoors, but if you haven't done this when you're camping, I highly recommend leaving the campsite better than you found it. It's so fulfilling. It makes you mm-hmm. feel so good about yourself. Straight up. If you think mm-hmm. I'm lying, just do it and try it. It makes like, you feel like a superior earth. Person. Like when you like clean it all the way up, you burn it all down, everything's put exactly where it needs to be, and you're leaving and you're like, I have just set up some idiot, some dum-dum for the greatest campsite arrival mm-hmm. of their lives. Mm-hmm. And they don't even know that they need to appreciate it at this level. Mm-hmm. So anyway, give it a try. It's a lot of fun. It makes you feel so superior to other people.
Yep. Yep, it's all true. And so again, like, I don't know how comparable that is in the desert. I do appreciate that, you know, the organization now, you know, remember that when we started this journey, we were on a beach with like 40 people in California. Yes. And so now we're in the desert with 70,000 people, which is the max attendance. And it has evolved into what it is now, which is a very cool, exciting, novel, heavy on the art, which is always a good idea, relatively safe, relatively considered of the earth event. It has priced people out of itself, which is unfortunate, but I appreciate that they have art scholarships so that, you know, many artists can still be there and participate and contribute. You know, I don't necessarily think it's bad to price people out, because maybe sometimes when you price people out, what you do is include people who are acting with more intention because they paid to be there. So there's an argument to be made for that. I would like it if they have maybe, you know, scholarships. But I think that there are private groups who, in fact, do scholarships, because I do have lots of friends who regularly participate in Burning Man, and they're always looking for a free way in, and they usually find one. So there seem to be like ways to get in that, you know, I don't know how much work exchange they do and things like that. But so that is Burning Man overall. I think culturally, it's a shining example of what a small thing can grow to when people, for the most part, are acting with some integrity and are trying to keep the heart of something good. Obviously, Elon Musk ruins everything he touches and will most likely be the death of Burning Man. But, you know, outside of that, pretty great. Amarin, what are your thoughts on Burning Man?
I like Burning Man a lot. I don't want to, I'm going to try to phrase this in a way that's new, because I kind of feel like my summary thought is kind of where we were at the midpoint of this episode in my mind, which is that I love the concept of Burning Man. I love the making community, like we were talking about. I'm very into artistic expression. I like no rules for artistic expression. I want to see collaboration in art. All of this stuff is so amazing, but early days is where I'm seeing that in a way that appeals to me probably the most. Whereas as an anxiety person, as they start getting further in life and they're running into more problems in 2024, no, I'm never going to be interested in Burning Man. They've had too many issues. I feel like we've talked about, they need to reset it. But if they made like baby Burning Man, and it was obviously like, and I was like, oh, this is baby Burning Man. And I connected that because I was cool enough, which is a dream. I don't know that I would. then maybe I would go if I felt like such an insider and I caught on to it before Elon Musk.
Also, I think if I could just like materialize and dematerialize, I would go to Burning Man every day.
Oh, I'd pop in big time. If I had transportation powers, I would be like, what's up, guys? Oh, I'm loving the temple this year. Very sick. You know, well, like,
looks like it's dusk. Peace.
hey, you guys, I don't want to be here anymore. So bye. That would be.
Your art cars are looming over me.
Yeah, your mutant art cars are giving me a bad vibe. So I'm going to bounce now that the shadows are casting. That's kind of how I feel. I do feel kind of like a sadness, though, about the fact that I don't think it's something I could enjoy at this point, which I think is relevant, if that makes sense. I feel a loss, almost.
Yeah, same. And guys, if you're a Burning Man kid and you're listening to this and you're like, these two aren't cool enough to hang with us, we aren't cool enough to hang with you. And we would like to be. We like your scene.
Yes, we do.
It's just, it's a lot. Y'all, it's a lot. You got to admit, it's a lot.
And I'm open. It's a lot. And I'm genuinely open, as we always are. We're never like on the podcast saying that our word is truth. So obviously I'm not saying that's usually the standard, but like, I'm very open to being wrong about this. If someone wants to tell me, oh my God, actually Burning Man is about to have a rebirth and phase two is going to be better than the first one, I'm so open to that.
But I think the point of pride is I can hang at Burning Man and you can't. I think that's the whole point of Burning Man. It's like the same reason people run. It's not for fun. It's to tell you to run.
Yeah. And if but see, for me, I think that's so fair, because for me, like, I have a sense of like independence and strength that I consider cool and gives me confidence for things like camping, as I've repeatedly mentioned, or backpacking for long amounts of time. This is a totally new thing. And I want to say, like, your ability to hang at Burning Man is different than your ability. Like, it's not just like surviving in the wilderness. This is a totally new skill set. And I do respect the hell out of it. It's very different. And I am like, I don't know, maybe if there were like courses, I could get there. But like, I'm not that girl. So I do think it's really important to emphasize that, like, yeah, maybe this climate in today's day and age is perfect for a different type of person than you or I. I just don't get it yet.
But let us make this promise to you, Burners. If we ever do get to come, if we ever feel like tough enough and strong enough and we can go like hang at Burning Man, we'll definitely come, and we will not ever, ever stay in a two-story air-conditioned lobster fest.
hell no, that will not be where I will be at. I'll be under the art trucks taking a nap, probably. That's like a safe spot. But
I'll be at the temple. Yeah. I will just always be at the temple.
I'll be right in that temple. I'll be under the shifting man who's changing spaces and walking around in the earth.
I am not going to navigate by that guy. I'm on to you guys.
Brought my own compass. So
yeah. Okay. So are you, Amarin, joining Burning Man? Beyond, okay, let's set aside that we are not the type of people with the physicality to hang. If we were the people with the physicality to hang and we're just talking about whether we join it overall, are you joining Burning Man?
Yeah, I think so. I think I have to be fair. Like, you can't, it's just like 2023 was so recent. So it's just like, I can't be like, oh, but they had all that flooding. It's like, well, that was last year. Okay, so let's just pad that out a little bit and be like, you can't control the freaking weather. Gotta give them that. You can plan for it, but you can't control it. And
I'm going to remind you that they canceled events for weather for days. So you actually would have had many days to be like, this seems like a bad setup. I'm going to go.
I'm glad you brought that up because yeah, it is like literally there. And there were people as a note, because you haven't brought this up yet. There were people that left before
Lots
you couldn't
of them.
Leave. Tons yeah. of people left. So they're actually, I'm glad we got to this point because we didn't bring this up really before too yeah. much and emphasize like, yes, people did think better of it that literally went. It wasn't like a freak flash flood, which I'm sure Midwesterners are very familiar with, where they were just trapped suddenly because the bridge is gone. No, right. if they had anticipation for this. Like this is, don't give them too much credit on that one.
That's called cutting your losses.
Yeah, exactly. It's strategizing. And also just like, I don't know, not to be rude, but like critical thinking, like self-preservation, like these things.
I would too. I think that the people who got stuck there were mostly the kind of people who were like, maybe I'm going to get stuck here.
I love that point. Probably so. And there is the adventure element. You can't discount that. Like, I don't know.
It's a good story.
It's a good story. And I understand like being like, oh, maybe I'm out of my element for what I thought this adventure would be. Like, I thought it would be adventurous, but now this is like too adventurous. I can understand that too. But yeah, still, I would encourage you guys next time to bounce and just try again next year, given the chance.
I'm going to tell you a brief 1 minute story about when I lived in a commune in Missouri, and we all went to the farm in Tennessee, which was, I don't have to start. It was magical and amazing, the best thing ever. So we all piled into a van and drove to the farm because the farm was having an event and other communes were invited. So it's like a commune party at the ultimate commune, the coolest. So we went down to the farm. It was so amazing. And I spent a week there and then we were all coming back. But of course, like our vehicles are for shit and they're just a bunch of like Muppet vans. And so it's a bunch of Muppets crammed in there eating each other's food. And it was, I travel badly to begin with. It was stressful to begin with. I was like, okay, I'm white knuckling it. We're driving back to Missouri. It's only a 7-hour drive. It's going to be totally, you know, I'm like, I'm getting there. The van got stuck on the side of the road, totally broke down. And it was full of hand rolled cigarettes because everyone in communes rolls their own cigarettes.
Right.
And so then like the cops pulled over and they thought they were joints and we kept being like, smell them, just smell them. And the cops were like, we know what this is. And we're like,
but they smell so different though. Like, so smell them.
So, and it was so stressful. And then they were going to be stuck there like basically overnight. And they were like, well, I guess we'll just camp in this ditch over here. And like somebody will come and pick us up tomorrow from the commune. Yes. And we'll come back for the van. And I just walked down the highway and hitchhiked home. I was like, good luck to all of you. I can't live like this. Like,
I'm out.
You're making me feel trapped and I hate it. So
couldn't do that. Literally.
Oh, and then they'd like picked
that.
Up a stray dog at a gas station on the way back to the commune. So there was like a stray dog with us. I was like, you're all too much. I can't live
what
like this.
What is the commune rule? We can't be picking up stray dogs. We talked about this. No wild dog packs. Okay. Okay.
We
guys.
Talked about it. Honestly.
Not some other unsuspecting young woman save this dog who has an apartment to take it home to. Come on.
It's ridiculous.
Let him be free.
He did end up being a commune dog and his name was Frisbee. So,
oh, actually, I love that. And I'm sad that I suggested that they didn't pick him up. Like, go, Frisbee. I love dogs so much. I know.
He was a good, good dog. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, there is no world where I'm staying trapped. Goodbye.
No.
Goodbye. I will walk home from Tennessee.
Yep.
Fare thee well. I've got
no
a banana
problem.
And I'm out. So. Yes, I too will join Burning Man. I love the culture. I love the scene. It isn't my scene or my aesthetic, but that's something that I like about it because the world doesn't have to be all shit that I like. You know, like I want to go to a Mad Max that's, again, Anne of Green Gables based, right? But like, I really love that this is somebody else's really cool art and it's their scene and it's their aesthetic. And it's not something that would I am a working artist. I just showed Amarin my latest picture for my tea towel design. And it's like a cat with a prayer cap on and a pretty dress and smock. And she's hexing the patriarchy. And it's very sweet. And that's my art aesthetic. You will never see anything like Burning Man in any of my art because it doesn't even come into my consciousness. It's just not my look, but it's the look of people I like a lot. And I love that. It's so cool. I love that you're all a bunch of weird land pirates. And so I love that we think of things just totally differently and I can go see your art and view your view. So I love that about Burning Man. I appreciate that they're trying to keep it as wrangled in as they can. I'm not suggesting that someone harm the billionaires that come there, but I am suggesting there are ways to make them less comfortable in their air conditioning. I'm just thinking out loud, fire ants, electricity failure.
Sometimes electricity and it's just stop working. You know, electricity is a very finicky thing.
So, what about an isolated, quote, rainstorm just where they are? Just mud around?
Dead fish in the ventilation system?
Dead fish in the ventilation. A classic. Easy.
But remember, get your throwing arm out. Get it in there. Good. You don't want it right in the grate right when they open it. So they can pull it out. You got to put it in there pretty good. Yeah. So they got to get the smallest guy on their team and send him in there. Okay.
That's very Muppet-based revenge.
Okay, you guys following this there. Physical humor. We need to you have to visualize it for it to be funny. This is a audio platform. Okay.
There is a Muppet who just throws fish at Muppet events. I don't know if you've ever noticed him, but he just goes around throwing fish. So
That's my inner self right there is that Muppet running around throwing fish at things. Honestly, with how cynical I am, that makes sense.
Burning Man aesthetic.
We love Burning Man aesthetic. I want to say one quick thing as I transition to Burning Man aesthetic. And it's just that I love what you're saying about how it's not your general street and how that makes it better for you in many ways.
The
one note that I want to add is just that I think, and I'm sure you agree, but I think that being around art being expressed differently in a way that your brain doesn't do it makes your art better every time
because
it introduces new like neural pathways, literally.
Yes.
But also like just seeing the way that somebody does stuff, whether it's technique or just like a totally out of the box thing, like maybe this person's painting their picture frame with some of the paint from the painting as well as just the painting canvas itself, something like that. Those little tweaks. That's how art works. So it's so cool to see people processing art differently because it can just make you even better. And it doesn't have to be about you at all. It can just be about them and their art. But it's just kind of a cool angle. And I love that. Aesthetically, I'm in. I know that I told you this, but like while this is not actually my like primary aesthetic by any means, and I
still
don't
love a good costume.
I love costuming. I love an event. I love something we're all getting behind collectively. I freaking love Mad Max. I know I told you this before, and it's like a pretty similar aesthetic. I very, very, very much love that. And I have a long, deep-seated, semi-toxic love affair with the concept of pirates. So as you said,
I know this about you.
You do know this thing about me. It's literally like everybody in my life knows that I have a deep obsession with piracy. And
didn't
it's like,
you write a pirate novel?
I sure did. And then I deleted it. So now I'm rewriting it. It's literally a toxic relationship. All that matters is that I love the concept of like freedom and piracy. What can I say? I was raised fundamental Christian. How basic can you be? And I think this is sick for that reason. And I'm like, let's run around and just behave like absolute crazy people if we feel like it, or just sit there and have a hand-rolled cigarette, whatever we want.
I love all of this. I'm going to give them a 10 just for the for the love of costuming itself. Yeah. I'm going to give them a 10. Shout out to those original Santas that started the theme camps with the fruitcake.
Yes, you guys had that vision.
Really, you really did. And you created something long lasting. I hope you're still out there Santa-ing, even though Santa creeps me out. I didn't grow up with him. I think he's sketchy, but I'm glad you
and Sandy your way.
That would terrify the fuck out of me, by the way.
Honest to God, yeah, that sounds horrible to me specifically aesthetically. I admire you guys a lot, but yikes, not in a dark alley, please. I'd take a clown sooner with like a knife for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Take? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not that obscure combo. Yeah, I didn't put my number on there, so I'll throw mine is probably 9. I'm going to give them the 10 opening, but I love the costuming. I think they've got aesthetic TM, right? And like the ideal aesthetic is that it's defined, not that I agree with it completely.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I'm like, hell yeah, you sent it. The aesthetic's locked in. I'm taking one aesthetic point away for the great catastrophe of 2023.
Okay, I'm actually going to take one aesthetic point away as well and go back down to a 9 because I really would like to see the nudity brought back. So that's
where... Oh my
where-
God. Oh, I'm not going to change my rating, but you're so right. I endorse it. Oh, okay. Nudity needs to come back. It's the desert, for God's sake. We need a little nudity.
The aesthetic matchup is there. I don't know what I need to explain to you guys. Rethink it is all I'm saying. Okay.
That's all I'm asking.
All right. With that, I think we're a wrap on Burning Man. Amarin and I are both going to join. We'll see you there only in the daylight for us, but we wish you well at night. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Wackadooiness. I'm giving them a straight 10.
It's me too. Okay. We're good. We're done. Yeah. We covered it. They're tense. They're wacky. They're keeping it real. It's evolving. It's strange. They got Elon. There's a lot of wackiness.
I mean, and props to a festival that both murdered and brought my boyfriend back to life.
Honestly, I hadn't considered this, but Wackadooie is 10 just for the life and death and life again of Kenny. And yeah. Is he still with us? In present day?
No, he's not. And
I couldn't remember if you'd shared that. No, I understand what happened there. But
I'll just say, an addendum on Kenny. So yes. Kenny was stunningly beautiful to look at and was a beautiful soul as well. He struggled with addiction. This wasn't true when I knew him because we were like literally teenagers who met at the Rainbow, but it was a short path for him to addiction. And in fact, I think he picked it up while he was away in the Burning Man genre. I think that's when he picked that addiction up. And so we only picked up a friendship when he came back because he was already like hanging with people that I was like, these people look like heroin addicts. So but he was wonderful and amazing. And many years went by and I got married and had a kid and got divorced and like went on with my life. And then only in the last like maybe 2 years, I am in a therapy group and the therapy is for addicts. And I am not an addict, but I have phobias and the therapy is basically the same.
That makes sense.
With phobias or addiction. So I go to this therapy group for my phobias, but it is almost entirely addict based. And this guy came in who had the most beautiful blue eyes I'd ever seen. I'd only ever seen them one other time. And it was on Kenny, my beautiful boyfriend, just these stunning blue eyes shining out of this face. And I was like, I mean, I hadn't thought about Kenny in years, but I was like, those are Kenny's eyes. Okay. So I came in late to the class and this new person had already introduced himself and I missed it. And he said something in class and I said, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but do you have a brother? And everybody in the class like glared at me and they were like, you were late. He had a brother. He died of his addiction. And I was like, was your brother's name Kenny? And he's like, yeah. And I was like,
oh my God. Oh
yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Well, now I'm bummed. I'm sorry. No. Listen, Kenny was a beautiful person, and I think he had a beautiful life. And from what I have seen through my subsequent internet stalking, I think he was very well loved. Mm. He actually was in recovery for years, did not die of drugs, died of Suboxone, which is for people in withdrawal, and the fix drug killed him. So I think this is a great moment to say the opioid industry is a murderous monster. And
this is a great plug against the opioid industry. Yeah.
But he did not die at Burning Man. He lived another like 20 years and
he did
20 beautiful years for a beautiful person. So let's be happy that he had all that extra time and did not expire at Burning Man where he died and came back to life.
Nope. He just was a really freaking good story. And he went on to see many more days and good for him. I love it. It is, of course, sad that he's no longer with us, but you know what happens to truly all of us. And it sounds like it was a good life for him. For, you know, it's his life. And that's what matters.
It is
that he gets to make his choices. And yeah, sometimes they don't take us exactly where we thought that they were going to, but we still got to choose. And that's pretty freaking awesome most of the time.
And I'm guessing he told that story forever because the scars were intense.
Dude, so. I would be telling that story just at the bar, you know? Right, I would just be like, what's your name? Hannah, lean in here. Hey, one time, let's talk. One time I died at Burning Man. Let me tell you more. All right, let's go back.
Hannah, we're not to you yet. Shh.
Hannah, shh. I don't care about your mommy's issues. I want to talk about Burning Man.
I mean, I certainly did that. It wasn't even my story. I was like, and so then I wrote him a letter and I said, if you're not dead.
And that is your right as someone who had the light secondhand trauma of this experience. To be fair, you earned it, I think.
Thank you. Thank you, Burning Man. We're in your corner. We hope you have a lot of great years ahead of you. Consider our advice about the billionaires and the nudity, and we will catch you on the player.
Catch you on the player.
Hey, friends. If you are loving Cults I Join and want to help us share the fun, here are some actions you can take. Subscribe and share the show on any podcast platform. Rate and review us on Google. This keeps us visible and gives an angel its wings. Or at least that's what our guru says. Follow us at Cults I Join on the .com, the Facebook, and the Insta, and then hit us there with all your comments, discussions, and questions. We really do love hearing what you think. Finally, a huge thank you to our co-creators. Editing and post-production is by DeverWeb, and the biggest thanks to the incomparable Miss Devin Spruill, our theme song creator and performer. You should go soak up her music right now. And that's it, y'all. Thanks for listening, and happy culting!